Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them, and not necessarily those of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. And good evening and welcome once again to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And she is the always lovely. She is the mystical. She is the mysterious. And she is Lynn Nickerson.
And I'm ready.
And, you know, it's been so long since I've been here, and I actually remembered all that.
I'm very proud of you, Willie.
I'm very proud of myself. I think I should be.
Mm-hmm. You know, I almost forgot what you looked like.
Yeah, I know it. I know it.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
And you're recouping real good, aren't
and
you?
I am doing excellently.
Marvelous.
Is that a word, excellently?
Something like that,
well,
yeah.
If not, I just made one up.
But, you know, I think the important thing is communication, and whether you make grammatical mistakes, it really doesn't matter, Willie. As long as people understand what you're trying to say.
If it mattered, I would have been sunk a long time ago. Yeah. But, hey.
It's nice to see you back. Welcome back.
It's nice to be back. It's nice to be seen back. It's nice to see you here, and everything's nice.
Hey, so we're going to talk about today a little bit?
We are. We attended a very good, what do you call it? Well, it was the Saucer Symposium.
Saucer Symposium.
What it was, I don't know what the
word
I was.
It was a presentation, you know, a series of lectures on the paranormal. But basically, I think we focused on UFOs, didn't we, pretty much everybody?
Saucer Symposium, which is put on, it's today and tomorrow, actually, by the... New England...
Seacoast Saucers.
Bell.
Seacoast Saucers of New England.
Here we go. It is to benefit the Kiwanis Club.
Which is to benefit the...
Did you leave your brains back in the hospital room?
No, maybe they operated on my head.
The wrong part.
I knew I should have drawn something, a little arrow on the back here. Cut here, not up there. But anyway. Exeter UFO Festival, that's what it is.
That's right, which is sponsored by the Kiwanis Club.
It's all benefits. Yep. Eventually, that's where it ends up, the UFO Festival, which
it's a very
money
good cause.
Goes to the Kiwanis Club, and it's all good.
Yeah,
let's
and how many years, Bell, has that been going on? Anybody? Chuck?
I don't know how many years.
I believe
many.
This is the eighth year. I could be incorrect.
Okay. It's,
for the Exeter.
Almost a decade.
And it's the second year for the Saucer Symposium, is that correct?
Yes, it is. It happens to be our second year.
Second
Marvelous.
Year. All right. Phil, you want to tell us a little bit about what...
Do you want to introduce our guests first, Willie?
Hey.
Yeah.
You got a good idea there. Well, one of our guests is Val.
That's right. Valerie Lafaso.
That would be Val Lafaso from Seacoast Saucers of New England, along with... Chuck Credo, he's over there. I can see him
it
now.
It is a pleasure to be here with you both again.
Oh, thank you,
pleasure
Chuck.
Pleasure to have you.
Also from Seacoast Saucers of New England, who are, as we said, sponsoring the symposium. And we also have Ben Eno, who is always a legend.
Eno.
Oh, don't hassle me,
Ben,
Willie.
Ben didn't make it. Ben isn't feeling well, so.
No, but wait a minute. Now, the last word we got was Ben is doing okay.
Ben's doing okay, but he's not here, Willie.
Yeah, I know it. Hey.
I actually had to call my wife to check on Ben, who was staying at my house for Paul's wife. So this goes up the chain of command, as you can see.
I know
it's a lot like the military.
So anyway, in the studio, we have Paul Eno. He's a legend. He's the host of Behind the Paranormal, an author of a whole bunch of books.
And behind the paranormal is a radio show.
Yeah.
But he has many books.
The latest one being Behind the Paranormal, Everything You Know Is Wrong, which was co-authored by Ben Eno, his son.
Well, thank you. Good evening.
Welcome.
Hi, Paul.
Even though he's not here, he did help write the book.
Right.
Yep. He got co-author credit. Yeah, Willie managed to get that in.
Yeah, well, I got that in before I really even knew what was going on. But, you know, hey, I'm doing my best.
And before we leave that, Paul, what is the title of your next book that's coming out soon?
Yes, with any luck from the leprechauns and the elves, it'll be out next month, June, at the end of June. It's called Behind the Paranormal, Bigfoot, Mothman, and Monsters You Never Heard Of.
Wow.
Which we thought of aiming at a young audience, but trying to figure out how to not scare them to death, we're just going to aim it at a general audience. So it's almost finished, and it'll be in print hopefully within the next month.
Oh, excellent. Good. We'd like to talk about that a little bit tonight, too.
Sure. And I want to mention before we get started again, if anybody wants to give us a call and talk to any of our guests, ask questions, make statements, just say hi.
Comment on the symposium, whatever.
And I understand they're having a little listening party over there at KRI tonight. So,
yes, we are.
Good evening, everybody. Wonderful. And give us a call, 603-430-9722. Or if you don't want to actually call, that same number you can text a question. And that, once again, is 603-430-9722.
Excellent. You got it all in.
I got it in. Okay, now.
Good job, Willie. Now, we had addressed Val. We were asking Val a question. What was it? Do you remember, Val?
Well, just tell us a little bit about the Saucer Symposium. But I think we kind of went over it in the reintroduction, or whatever that was.
I'm sure Val
has
something to add.
You covered a good portion of it. You know, we started the Saucer Symposium to benefit the Exeter area Kiwanis, as you said. The funds go directly to the Kiwanis, 100% of it. None of our speakers are getting paid to be here today. They've all generously donated their time. And the money then, in turn, does help the Exeter Kiwanis put on the Exeter UFO Festival, and the proceeds from that go to children's charities in the area. So
that is so nice. Good, worthy causes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Well, I was thinking of maybe giving Chuck the floor for a moment.
Chuck, you're on.
That could be very dangerous.
Don't be bashful, Chuck.
Earth to Chuck. Well, we understand that you're working on a documentary, and you've called it the Galileo Interviews, right?
Yes, a series of documentaries.
Okay. So why don't you give our audience a summary of what it's all about, and then maybe get into one case or something?
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay.
So the Galileo Interviews, as we call them, are interview-style documentaries, and it's a project that I've had in my mind for a little over a year. Being one of the co-founders, along with Valerie and Mike Stevens, Seco Saucers, we would constantly hear these stories from people who have had experiences, not just with UFOs or aliens, but people whose experiences would question everything that the common person or layperson today takes for granted, meaning what is time? Is it really a linear? Are we all connected in this spiritual sense? Are there really just a few dimensions that we experience? Are there more?
And what is reality?
What is reality?
Yeah,
what
that's
is
a
it?
Good one.
And these are things that I hope we question Paul Eno, who is right to my right about Little Tonight, because I've got to be quite honest, he has been a precursor for helping me start to really look at some of these things through
good,
the years.
Good.
And one of the best days of my life is meeting this man, because he so eloquently put so many different parts to what had really been astounding me and so many people all these years. Because here we are, we're an organization dedicated to helping create social change around UFOs. But the truth is what's behind a lot of these experiences people have are questions around how does time work? Because there are so many people that have had experiences with ETs. And not the most typical person will talk about these, but once you get someone open up, one of the commonalities is time seems to stop in some cases. Mm-hmm. Or things freeze, and people look around this room, and they're having this experience where nobody's moving, or somebody's frozen, but they're moving. And that was a commonality. I was finding a lot of stories. Other stories around how it is that these things move people through walls to either abduct or have an experience with somebody. These can't happen with the logic that science uses today. And I'm fascinated with the stories. And being somebody that spent so many years investigating, interviewing people, I love asking good questions to people. And for me, this is a search for the truth,
mm-hmm.
but through someone's experiences, through their reality and what mm-hmm. they've shown. So it takes a lot to be talking on a series that anybody can watch on YouTube about things that quite literally will make you sound potentially crazy to the mass public. So
because
it takes a lot of courage.
The laws of physics, as we know them, simply don't apply when people start walking through walls or see through ceilings.
I don't think so. I think the answer to that is clearly we don't have all the answers.
We don't have all the answers.
But at this point, I've now interviewed three different individuals where I'm in the step of trying to get all the editing done. But the first one that I'll be finishing is a woman by the name of Marina Rose, who is a local to the area. She lives in Dover, and she owns a touring company where she takes people out to various countries, including actually right here in Florida, to Bimini to swim with dolphins. And her story is absolutely fascinating.
Neat.
And if you'd like me to talk about it, I can quickly share a little bit about her just to kind of whet the appetites for people.
Sure.
And the first one will be releasing. But this is a woman I met actually at Raymond Fowler's basement, who is an esteemed ufologist and author. And she and I were taking a class together, and I immediately got the message, I've got to meet this woman. That just popped into my head. I'm like, all right, I've got to talk to this woman. So long story short, I get to know her. I give her my card. She shows up to a social saucer meeting, mm-hmm. which we hold at the KRI Center in in Stratum. And she shares her story the first night. And essentially, she goes into a meditation. She was hoping to connect with spirit guides. She has
Saying she did it that night or she was relating that to
this
you?
This was a year prior to meeting her. She had, not even within a year, had decided that she was going to go into a meditation and try to meet spirit guides. That was her intent. Never researched anything about UFOs or aliens. And she goes into a meditation, and all of a sudden she's on a ship. And she sees a being, and the being's quite odd. It's differently described, and I'll save the details for the actual interview, than any other creature that different parts to this creature than other people have ever talked about.
Hmm.
And she's on the ship, and she has this whole meditation. She comes out of the meditation. She says, all right, I need to get grounded. That was a little crazy. that wasn't what I was looking for. She looks out her window, and out her window in Dover, New Hampshire, she sees the exact ship she was just on. Wiggling up, down, left and right, moving around the sky before it just takes off and goes boom, and it's gone. Mm. And one thing they said to her that I found was fascinating was, your mother's essence was with us here on the ship. Her mother had been dead for 3 years, and she later found out from her mother's good friend, who survived, that her mother had talked to her about seeing ships in the same area she was living. And her mom had never told her about that. And this is just one of many things in this interview that I found absolutely fascinating, because it starts to question how our energy is, or what is the soul potentially,
mm-hmm.
What is really going on with the human condition. Why is it that a mother would have these experiences, not talk to her daughter yet after her death? Her best friend would hear her, now as an adult woman, talk about this and say, oh, by the way, your mother had very similar experiences. Here's what she told me, the same area. So this is just one of many things with Marina that's fascinating. She's very spiritual. She has followed her intuition to get to where she is.
Mm-hmm.
And I find her story among many people to be just utterly fascinating.
Well, I've got to interject a question here really quickly. When she was told about her mother's essence being on the ship, was there an indication that she was there purely in spirit form, or was she reincarnating as a being? Had she reincarnated as a being?
Well, I think Marina would like to have that answer herself. Okay. So for me to be able to answer that, it would be all speculation. I have no clue, to be quite honest with you.
Hmm.
I think if Marina were here today, which I've asked her a very similar question, but not that exact question, she really doesn't know. She really doesn't know what that meant. Again, if you're in a meditation, you see some weird being and you're not expecting any of this, and you've never looked into it, Yeah. I don't think you're asking a lot of great questions. You're just kind of fumbling through a meditation.
Well, you said it was about a year ago, so I thought maybe in retrospect, if she had researched it a little bit, perhaps she went to a psychic who might have gotten an impression of what the situation was. So I didn't know if maybe she got some, byproduct information.
It's a great question. It's one I think she would love that answer to.
Well, perhaps she'll find an answer to it. That's a fascinating story.
And that's
story.
Just one of many things. And I will just say real quickly, if you're interested in dolphin communication through telepathy, you've got to listen to this interview because it's one other thing. And she is one of only two people that I've ever heard talk about this, but absolutely fascinating stuff.
Frank Joseph, he's pretty renowned. He's got a lot of articles in Fate magazine. I believe he lives in Portland, Maine now, but he's got a book out about dolphins and how the dolphins, oh, I forgot the other creature, whales, that supposedly human beings are somewhat descended from them. And there were some pictures in that book of cave art. They were saying that it was about the oldest known cave art in the south of Africa of humanoid creatures with fish tails. And they were both male and female. So it would be mermaids and mermen. But the point was that we in some way, or at least some of the races here on Earth, have descended from aquatic creatures. So the dolphin thing being really, dolphins are really intelligent and so are whales. This is kind of interesting. A little synchronicity.
I find it fascinating.
There.
And that's just one of three interviews I've done. The other two involve the co-founder of Seaco Saucers, Mike Stevens, who himself is an abductee. And we worked together to piece together his timeline. We found things that matched up that he had never even thought about once we started putting dates together and really researching that. And that one will be coming out shortly after. And then I have interviewed somebody who is named Eric Mitchell and had enough time to interview him before he left for Vegas, where he's currently living with his girlfriend and a woman that's helping him author some books. And he apparently is being looked at by Ancient Aliens to be on the next season. So we'll see if that actually happens or if that kind of comes to fruition or not. But again, another fascinating person who we've known about for 2 years now and has some really strange things going on.
He was so reticent for so long.
Yeah. Do you know Eric?
Oh, Eric. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about Mike.
No, I'm talking about Eric Mitchell.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sorry.
The third interview. Of the
I got derailed somehow.
That's all right. We were just talking about
join the club.
But yeah, looking forward to it. And as far as the symposium, if people aren't aware, KRI Center is having that full symposium tomorrow. We've got a whole list of other speakers as well, just to add to that. And we look forward to having people stop in tomorrow.
Can you give us an idea?
Who is speaking tomorrow?
So it starts at 10:30, and we're going to do a social saucers gathering for people to just, you know, discuss different aspects of ufology and all that. At 12, Paul and Ben are going to be broadcasting live with any of the speakers who are there to speak. At, I think, 1:15 or 1:30, we're going to start the speakers again. We have Ronnie LeBlanc, who is going to be talking about Monsterland. I will be speaking as well. I'm going to be talking about how I went from writing about mediums to being one.
Oh, good.
We have another cryptozoologist, Alexander Petrikov. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I think I said that right. And Mike Stevens will also be speaking.
Wonderful.
Oh, okay. Jeremy Detremont is going to be speaking on lighthouses as well.
Okay, so Alexander's going to be talking about Bigfoot?
Yes.
And you are going to be talking about your psychicness?
psychicness? Yeah. Oh, so you can make up words, too.
The important thing is communication, Willie. And then Jeremy, Haunted Lighthouses.
Yes.
Wonderful. And are we all going to be on Paul's show?
Yes, you. As long as you're there, we're going to have a panel of the speakers 10 o'clock to, I should say, 12 o'clock to 1 p.m. And it's broadcast live over at WON 1240 in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. This is probably outside the listening area. So if you go to behindtheparanormal.com, there are instructions how to get the show if you're not listening over your car radio or something like that.
Right? Good, because, I mean, all of our fans are going to want to listen.
Sure.
That's right.
That is just wonderful. It should be fun tomorrow. It was fun today. Very interesting. Yeah,
it's always a great event.
And we have some wonderful raffle items as well.
That's right.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I still have a chance to buy a ticket.
Yes. We gave away half of the stuff today, and the rest is going to be raffled off tomorrow.
Okay. Excellent. Well, Paul, then, since you've got... Well, you going to say something, Willie?
No, it wasn't important. This is much more important, believe me.
I figured. Okay.
Excuse me?
Just kidding. Paul, so you've got one book out and you've got this other one coming out. So I'm going to give you a choice here. What would you like to get into?
Well, probably...
Not to sway you, no. But I'd really like to hear more about Pennsylvania.
Oh, sure. Okay, well, that's not in either book. Oh, yes, what am I talking? Of course, it's in the second book, and the Bigfoot chapter. My own very strange experience and... You know, I've been at this for 47 years, and it still is surprising when something bizarre happens.
It's shocking, really.
And it's unexpected. And to make a long story short, Ben and I, since 2005, have specialized in what we call flap areas, paranormal flap areas. It's nothing to do with birds, although there are bird-like cryptids, strange creatures that aren't recognized by science. But we find that we would investigate, say, a quote-unquote haunted house. But if you look beyond that, beyond the family, beyond the house, to the neighbors, chances are they have something going on. And in a 1998 case, somebody said, well, yeah, we have poltergeist activity in the house. We also saw a UFO landing across the road. Mm-hmm. And I said, gee, could there be connections between all these phenomena? And sure enough, over the years, we believe we've discovered many connections. And if we're right, it's quite interesting. The one in central Connecticut has expanded to about 220 square miles. And the one in Pennsylvania is relatively new. We had a woman who read William J. Hall's book, The Haunted House Diaries, which is about the Central Connecticut flap. And as a matter of fact, I jokingly suggested that he write the book, and he went and did it. I said, I don't know, this case isn't really ready for prime time. But in any case, the characteristics of a flap area, including the Pennsylvania one now, is that you have multiple... paranormal events that are traditionally would be considered unrelated. UFOs, ghosts, poltergeists, Bigfoot, and other things that really don't have a name yet. You couldn't make this stuff up.
It gets really bizarre, strange
things of all kinds. But in the Pennsylvania case, Bigfoot seemed to be one of the starring characters, all right? Just about everyone around the area has seen it. Now, we started with a house of the family that read Bill Hall's book, and we went down for the first time in May of last year, just about a year ago. And Ben couldn't make it, but Shane Searway, who is a very dear friend of ours, been on your show many times, and one of the few investigators I will work with, he's a Blackfoot shaman and a very feet-on-the-ground investigator. That's a very good combination. And we've been working together for 18 years now.
Oh, have you? Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, time flies when you're having fun, Lynn.
Oh, yeah.
So he came down with me. It was just the two of us. So the very first, I should say second day, broad daylight, it was raining, and he was down in the center of this flap is a 46-acre parcel owned by one family. He was down there in the family where they call it the campground. It's a clearing area in the woods, and all sorts of Bigfoot sightings have occurred there. Other sorts of things have occurred there. Strange lights. Shane suddenly looked up from his truck, and he saw between two trees, perhaps 150 feet away, a large black hairy figure between two trees, and he thought at first it was a bear because bears are common in western Pennsylvania. So he wanted to try and get a picture, you know, not have it be like all these other times when you try and take a picture and you get mush. So he starts the truck, heads up toward the thing, and the thing takes off from behind the trees, and it's on two legs, and these long arms are going, you know, back and forth along its side. And three deer were flushed from that spot. And then, of course, it had run off, and he couldn't do anything about it. So he was a bit flustered by that, didn't expect it. Now, our next expedition was, I'm thinking of the night of September 16th last year. It was a brilliantly moonlit Friday night. And Shane stationed himself down in that same spot. The family had an RV they let him use, and he slept there. I was in my truck up on top of the hill in back of the house that's this main family's home. And again, brilliantly moonlit night. And we had gotten some interesting pictures of strange lights in the sky, including what appeared to be some sort of triangular craft, which is a theme lately in UFO studies. Mm-hmm. And so I'm up there looking for strange lights in the sky. And it was rather chilly. I had the driver's side window open, but the other side was closed. So all of a sudden, something started snuffling under a deer stand that was all overgrown with grapevines. And there was an exhale like a large mammal. Like a, I don't know, I suppose
like a snort, like a bull.
Well, kind of like a snort, yeah, like a bull or a horse. So I said, you know, there could very well be a bear under there. And that got my attention away from lights that weren't there. And to the right, that stayed where it was, whatever. And off to the right, I saw, it was, the next day it turned out to be about 100 yards, a large, again, in the brilliant moonlight, brown-haired, two-legged creature. I have a vivid memory of the huge legs moving up and down in the grass and a head bent over as if looking for something. Now, for 100 years, people have been coming up to me and saying they've seen these things and that they felt privileged, not frightened, but privileged, and very much at peace. When other people have other experiences, but that's the experience I had, because I always go in with great respect in any sort of wilderness area. And that's what I felt. And now that I've, you know, I used to take it with a pillar of salt, but now it's happened to me. So, you know, I'm going to be maybe a little more sympathetic. So I'm not saying it was Bigfoot. But anyway, in any case, I snapped a picture with the infrared camera through the cold window. So obviously no heat signature. So zip.
Yeah.
And I went to get out of the car, the truck, I should say, and to kind of sneak around and try and get another shot. My phone rang. Now, I'm a little new to this Bigfoot stuff, so I should have known to turn it off. And so my ringtone is the Shire theme from the Lord of the Rings, which goes blasting out across the field. It was my wife. And I said, I'm in the middle of a Bigfoot sighting. He said, what? Closest I ever came to filing for divorce. And because naturally the critter was gone. So the next day, the next morning, Shane and I, first thing we did was go up to that field. And sure enough, there was something that had walked up through that field. Now, there's an addendum to the first night. Before that, after the experience occurred, I went and sat back in the truck. I was really shocked. All of a sudden, I see a spotlight shine up into the trees on the other side of the field. And it was very human, kind of flashlight kind of thing. So, and I didn't want to take off across the field because I wasn't sure what the terrain was. I would end up in some kind of crater with my truck. So Shane and I, meanwhile, the next morning went out and found this track. Something large had come up. Turned around, probably when my wife called, and then headed back for the woods. There were we measured everything, and Shane reenacted, and we took photographs and everything, and video and all this.
So you did not get a photo at that time because your wife called you, right?
I got a photo, but there's nothing in it that you see. All right. Okay. So that night, we had a neighborhood meeting of all the people in this, the beginnings of this flap area, who had had experiences, and like 20 people showed up.
Wow.
And they just about everyone had seen Bigfoot. One of them said that there were lights over their house, which we saw. There were other things, you name it, people have experienced, including various kinds of cryptids. Again, these creatures not recognized by science. Mm-hmm. So I related the story from the previous night, and a woman's hand went up, and her name was Melissa, and she lived in a house just over the lip of the hill from where I had this sighting. She said, that was my daughter and me. With the flashlights, and people are not, you know, they're wary, but they're used to this stuff. She said, we came home and we heard something large moving through that field at the same time I was watching it, apparently, and they came up to see what it was, and of course it was gone. So if this is what it appears to be, this may be independent corroboration of a sort for what I was seeing. Again, I make no claims, but I mean, if it wasn't a Bigfoot, then I'm a hobbit. I mean that's just the thing. So that was
can we check your feet for hairy feet, because hobbits do have very hairy feet.
Well, the moon was full last night, so I went to the barber. But Shane, now he gets better. And in the meantime, Shane, while that was going, was down, and this is the night before the neighborhood meeting, was down in that RV in that area where he'd had his sight. Of course, mm-hmm. It was all dark. And he said all night long there was a murmuring or a chattering back and forth that he could hear from the woods, like right next to the camper.
But But indistinct, no words really, right? Just some...
Well, it wasn't in the Queen's English, if that's what you mean. No.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, yeah.
Okay. Well, no, Shane said, and he didn't really know what it was. And so at the neighborhood meeting, everybody in the room said, oh, that's how they talk to each other. You know, so, I mean, Shane could consider himself lucky, but they didn't come and turn over the RV or anything. And they,
yeah.
You treat them with respect, and they seem to do the same thing with you, I would say.
They are huge creatures. This flap area, Paul, I've got two questions. The terrain, it's really varied, isn't it? Is there a lot of, like, quartz or granite?
Well, there is. This is a very interesting question, Lynn, because there was as a matter of fact, I had an allergic reaction to it. I have a metal allergy. You see, I can't wear a wedding band or anything. And there had been, apparently, I found out after the fact, according to the University of Pennsylvania, an apparent meteor strike in this area about the year 1500. And apparently it might have killed a bunch of natives. So the iron from this meteorite fills this hill. And I'm tramping up there. We found what could be a Bigfoot track with the toes and the whole thing up there. This is in May of last year. And there's a house where the family lives. But, you know, the thing that strikes me about this, yeah, we're talking about a large mammal, apparently. But this, and we find this all the time, this is farming country. You have copses or woodlots
of
maybe 8-10 acres. Mm-hmm. But then you have open fields and farms.
So it's really varied. It's not like it's a stone quarry or something. It's a varied terrain.
Yeah, there's a lot of metal in the soil. But I mean, I don't. My point is that if to have a breeding population of a large mammal, you need
cover
300 to 400 to 500. You know, 300 at least
acres of wooded area.
No, of individuals. For a breeding population.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
Where do you put these giant things, you know, when you don't have really that much cover?
Hence the idea that
we're always harping on, which is this idea of the multiple worlds interpretation of quantum physics and all this business. And we say, and the natives, the first people you talk to in the wilderness area when you're doing anything like this, you talk to hunters. And you talk to the natives. Hopefully mm-hmm. there are some.
Mm-hmm.
And between the two of them, the hunters see everything and the natives know everything. So pretty much. So they'll tell you this is a... I've had shamans in different parts of the world tell me these are essentially multiversal creatures in so many words.
And that they are a people, mm-hmm. but they're
interdimensional. They are a people. They are the elder brothers of
elder
the natives.
Elder brothers.
Yeah. Now, in Australia, they have not quite the same narrative. But in North America, they are considered a separate tribe. People, they're elder brothers, and very often the keepers of the game. Now, it's interesting that Shane's experience involved deer,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't see any deer with mine, but the people say the deer are often with them. On the other hand, they are sometimes known to hunt deer, supposedly, which is interesting. And speaking with Philip Spencer from Kentucky, I don't want to keep going on here to take up
Well, we are past our bottom of the hour.
Oh, sorry.
We could hold on just a second, Paul, and we'll take a break, and we'll be right back.
And Supernatural Magazine, one of the UK's top paranormal magazines, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. Lynn.
There we go.
You got some guests?
You know, is it on?
Yeah, it is.
All right. I thought you were going to ask me that. Next week, we're going to be doing a best of, a rerun show. And then we have a new guest. This is for the 3rd of July. I'm sorry, 3rd of June. Barry Fitzgerald. And he appeared on...
He's the lead investigator on Ghost Hunters International.
Right. So,
and also the author of several books.
That's right. And he's going to be guesting, and we're going to talk about the Roslyn Chapel and then the Monk's Cave there in the area of Roslyn. And also, too, this little history that Wallace and his warriors hid out in that cave. You know, the famed Wallace. Following week, the 10th, we have another new guest. And this would be co-authors Mason Winfield and Mike Bastine, and they wrote Iroquois Supernatural. And if I have it wrong, it's Supernatural Iroquois, but I believe it's Iroquois Supernatural. I've got the book at home and I'm reading it. But it has an awful lot to do with shamanism and traditions of the Iroquois Nation. That should be very interesting. So that wraps up our upcoming guest list.
Okay. So we do have a full studio tonight. We're talking to Paul Eno, Chuck Credo, and Bell LaFaso. I can barely see you two over there. I know you're there. Maybe if I stand up, you know. So anyway, welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
So, Paul, we were talking about your Bigfoot experience. I had a question before you continue. When Shane was talking today, he had a picture of going over to the tree where he thought that the Bigfoot stood in front of, and there was a poster there. And it must have been put on the tree about 7 feet up on the tree. And he said that, you know, the Bigfoot or whatever it was, that creature measured right up to that poster. So that's quite a large animal.
Yeah, it's 7.5 to 8 feet.
A creature.
And the one I saw, the one I believe I saw, was and when Shane reenacted it, was a shade 6 feet. And it was at least 1.5 to 2 feet taller than he was.
Wow. Huge. So nobody's got a picture of this yet.
Of course not. You know, we'll be back there in 2 weeks, so we'll see what we can do. Ben's coming with us.
That's wonderful.
You're gonna have to come back with picture this time.
Tell me, yeah, really. I can't stand not having pictures of things.
But what I was going to ask you was, you referred to this area as a flap area. So if you would explain that to us, would you define it as being like a portal area that may open and close from time to time?
Well, yes and no. They do. I'd rather refer to it as overwashes, overlaps, and intersect points. Portal means, in some of these places, they have seen literally holes open in the air and sky.
Yeah, that's right.
And things come through. So sure, I mean, it's as good a term as any.
Yeah, well, some use the term windows.
Yeah, windows, yeah.
Yeah, or portals.
Actually, our language isn't actually up to talking about
it. I know, you're right. It doesn't really adequately define this stuff.
No, but what's interesting, too, and not to monopolize, because other people should talk here, too, but we always run into the military in these areas every single time.
And not only here, but in the other locations as well, right?
In all the other locations as well. Certainly Rendlesham Forest in England, it was
one. That's right.
We were in the Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts in 2010. We were kind of laughing. Gee, we haven't run into the military here yet. And we're in the middle of nowhere. We turn a corner on a dirt road, and there's a whole line of unmarked utility trucks with rather forbidding-looking guys in sunglasses kind of looking at us go by. So maybe that was it. And maybe it's not the military. It could be. You never know. There are a lot of corporate interests here. In the Connecticut flap in the Goshen, Litchfield County, that area, there were ground troops, and they didn't care who knew it. This is in 2009 and 2010. People were asked not to proceed in certain places. People were in camo or black with masks and had M16s. And this that's the most developed case. We've been working on that case for over 10 years.
That's around the Philly residence, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The subject of Bill Hall's book.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's an ongoing production here and turning into a major saga.
Yeah, devise explanation.
Definitely something the military is interested in, for sure.
Well, wouldn't we like to weaponize the paranormal?
Yeah.
Or make it appear that we can manipulate time and space or really do manipulate
as well as control that energy, monopolize the energy, whatever it
is. A lot of money to be made if you can have it. And Ben's opinion in one of his, states, that's a long story. He didn't like me to talk about it, but he said that they were searching, among other things, portal areas as means to generate energy.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting practicality, but for energy for what? It would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Amount of power, one would think, if the plasma thing is correct. You know, it's who knows?
I think our government is, way ahead of us. Light years ahead of the rest of us, But
you never know. Nothing is what it appears to be, especially not in the paranormal.
Yeah. Well, then, Val, I wanted to get back to you. I did have a question. As Chuck was going on about what Marina had seen, and without disclosing exactly what it was that she saw, did you find a similarity as to what you've sensed from the ET? Because you said that you didn't want to reveal the identity or the appearance of this ET that guides you from time to time.
Right. I haven't heard her describe it, so I'm curious to know what she said, because it's
truly,
I'm on the edge of my seat waiting for somebody to say they've seen this type of entity.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what this looks like.
It hasn't happened yet.
When I gave my little lecture today, what comes to mind is I believe that there are different races out there. I believe too that there are entities that are purely energy, and there are probably entities that are a combination of humanoids and animals and stuff that we've just never dreamt of. But when they come into our 3D reality, I think that they do have the ability to mask how they appear, but all the same, if they were forthright in showcasing themselves to us, that they have to have some sort of pattern to reappear in the same way each time. I mean, if they come into our physical 3D atmosphere, I would think that they have to have like this DNA signature so that they appear as a certain entity. If they're grays, then they appear as grays. So my question is, do you feel that like this entity that is guiding you, if you think it's really purely light, or if you think perhaps it allows you to mentally perceive an appearance just so you can make an association with it?
That's a great question, and it's one that I really struggle with, because
really?
As an empath, I feel everything, and then I have to translate it into visuals. Mm. I do find that my visuals tend to be a little more accurate because I feel it first. So, things like, especially spirits will try to put up this, scary ghostly image and want to frighten us.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm sitting there going, I know you're not really scary. Just show me what you look like. And they tend not to like that very much. So I do feel like this particular entity is showing me a true form of some sort.
Okay.
I don't know that it's always how he appears, but it is a form that he takes very often. Interestingly enough as well, I also think he has some association with my father, who passed away 20 years ago.
Hmm. It's hard to understand what that means, because maybe your father is a part of an oversoul that they're both part of, this entity and your dad.
Yeah, I think it's a soul group thing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What did I say? Did I say an oversoul?
Yes.
Okay.
I haven't heard that term before.
Oh no.
But I like it.
Was it?
I think she just made it up.
No, I didn't. The woman who wrote the Seth books. Her name's not coming to mind, but she used that a lot.
Okay.
Trying to explain. Okay. How about you, Paul? In recognizing these different entities, what have you dealt with? Have you dealt with anything that appears 3D, physical, solid?
Yes. I'm thinking over the centuries I've been doing this. The first really jarring experience, the one I might call, people are, what's the scariest experience I've ever had? I think it had to be this one, because it really shook my world. 1974 in the Bridgeport, Connecticut house.
Oh, yes, yes.
Ed Lorraine Warren and the poltergeist outbreak.
Yes.
Probably, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, probably the best witnessed and documented poltergeist in history.
I think
police
you're
officers, reporters, firefighters, me, for what that was worth. I was a 21-year-old seminary student. Like, who's going to listen to me, right? But I was, I was there and I saw this stuff. And on the second night of the case, Monday, November 25th, 1974, the Warrens had gone off to do some TV show, and I was in the house with the family, which was a middle-aged couple, the 10-year-old girl, Marcy, a reporter, of course, and Ed liked reporters, and a neighbor. And we were playing, the little girl and I were playing Monopoly. My job during this thing was to make sure she wasn't doing any of the poltergeist stuff, like throwing anything and this sort of thing. So all of a sudden, the kitchen began to fill with energy. You could almost see like this gauzy kind of atmosphere.
Was it dark?
No, it was whitish.
Hmm.
And then I had felt there were four entities. Now, with my seminary training thus far, and there was Father Bill Charbonneau, a priest, these were demons and the place had to be exorcised. We were waiting for the Bishop of Bridgeport to give permission, because the Roman Catholics are very sticky about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that never came. But I said, there's just when I was involved with exorcisms too, in the next few years, there was just something not good enough about this whole approach. You know, I thought it was something different. So four entities. So one, and yeah, as I say, you can see like these gauzy structures. One came down the hall, and they all came down the hall, but one came stood right in front of me. I put the little girl behind me because I knew it was after her. And this is where I learned it was the hard way. You don't become angry, fearful, or annoyed in the presence of these things because they feed on it. They're parasitical life forms. Yeah. They weren't demons, you know, in any classical sense. So I was very upset. I just instinctively pushed against it. It pushed back, and I felt a physical strike. These are supposed to be spirits, yeah. Right? And I there was like a skeletal structure you could feel under the skin. And in the I have an illustration. It looks very bird-like.
I was going to ask you bird-like.
Oh, yeah, you've seen my, yeah. One of my presents. Yeah. And that's what it felt like. It's not what it looked like. It's what it felt like. So I was just thrown for a little. It got around me, threw the little girl across the room. And the energy in there got so strong, my hair was standing up. I pulled everybody out of the house. Fortunately, the police had cordoned off the street because there had been several thousand people outside this place. And we walked out into the sleet storm was beginning. You know, 1974, no cell phones. I had to go next door and use a phone. And but that was a three-dimensional figure that I could almost see.
But you couldn't walk through it because it actually had substance.
It had material substance.
It's such a dichotomy because you think you're looking at what appears to be a gaseous cloud and it's got substance.
Why did it look like a gaseous cloud? Because I think if I knew then what I think I know now.
It was masking.
No, you're looking through what physicists would call a brain, B-R-A-N-E, probably plasma charge boundary between its world and ours. Naturally, you're going to see it as a gauzy, ghostly kind of structure. Maybe that's where our folklore comes from. And they see us the same way, not just parasites.
Oh, really?
We run into ghosts who think we're ghosts haunting them, and they're afraid. In this house in Torrington, Connecticut, I had to talk to great grandparents who were alive in some parallel world that their great granddaughter wasn't a ghost haunting them because they were afraid of her. This is how nuts this gets. So when you take a different point of view.
In this book here, Celtic Mysteries, Windows to Another Dimension in America's Northeast, it's written by Phil Imbrogno and Marianne Horgan. And in it, I believe that this is Marianne doing a quote, but what is mentioned is, as mentioned earlier, four-dimensional space acts as a buffer between our world and a parallel reality.
Well, that's one way to put it. But I think that there are perhaps an infinite number of parallel realities.
Oh, I think so, too. There might be something buffering these other dimensions.
Yeah.
Do you think?
The brains.
Okay.
That's what a physicist would say. Now, they don't all interpret it the way we do. But two very famous physicists who are too famous to have to worry about grants and tenure do tend to agree with us. That's Fred Allen Wolf and Amit Goswami, who's going to be on our show in a couple of weeks.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, and so for what that's worth, hopefully, I mean, we could be wrong. The old 19th century ideas could be right. Mm-hmm. But we've just never seen it that way, and it doesn't work for us. I mean, you end up with Bigfoot when you start investigating ghosts when you hang with us.
I think that the whole prospect of understanding the reality, our 3D reality, and then how many other dimensions, what is existing in all of these other dimensions, how does it all interact? Like you saw what you thought was a cloud, but it had form. And some people communicate with just light beings. And like what Val communicates with, she gets a definite mental image. So
it's
what
all very
is
personal,
that?
Isn't it?
It is very personal, yeah. Too. So you have to find the words to describe it and to understand it beyond 3D.
Sure.
I just find it mind-blowing. Also, the other thing that's very relative to this is the subject of cryptids. And I wanted to ask you about a little bit about your book of cryptids, but I also wanted to ask you, Val, have you thought, well, you've got a series of books. Why don't you tell us about that, and then I'll ask my question.
Okay. It's called the Tangled Web of Friends series. Mm-hmm. The first two are published, Summer Camp and The Witches of Fishkill Pond. It's a young adult paranormal series about a girl who goes on a summer camp. She hits her head on a rock, and all of a sudden she's seeing spirits.
And that really happens, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it goes beyond that. It's really about how does it affect her? How does it affect her friends, her family, the people around her? And then it goes into the relationships that we have with living and dead people.
I don't think that's been done, not to the degree that you're doing it. I mean, there are stories here and there, but you're focusing on this in your series.
Yes.
I think it's a great idea, but you're also incorporating other paranormal issues or topics. So I'm curious if you have plans to incorporate something that is equally unbelievable like cryptids, something that people just don't understand.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think Andy at the center, he always says, you know, once you jump down the rabbit hole, you find how much there really is down there.
And how deep it is.
And it's true. You know, I started with all this stuff purely with a paranormal interest, not realizing I'd had, you know, UFO and ET experiences and, you know,
I think you buried believing, it in your subconscious.
Yeah, believing that it existed, but not believing that I had experienced it until I had a context for it. So I definitely want to bring all aspects of what I've experienced and what I'm learning about into the books. So, you know, maybe the people that read them will go, oh, hey, maybe I really did experience something. Mm-hmm. Maybe I shouldn't write that off.
Yep. Pay attention.
Yes.
I think it's really important. So do you think you're going to incorporate a cryptid?
I would like similar? To. Yeah. And I think ETs are definitely in the plan somewhere.
Good. I think that's essential. And Chuck, how about you? Have in your various interviews?
I have never written a children's book or a young adult book. That's what you're going to ask.
I see. Well, let me ask my next question. Have you run across anybody that was willing to discuss cryptids with you?
You know, I'd like to look at it this way. I have many years to come of doing potential further interviews. And if there's anybody out there... I'd like to go on record and just say, Paul Eno, if you're ever interested in being in the Galileo interviews, right there, he's already just talked about a couple of instances in which we're talking about cryptids. But this gentleman next to me has so many different stories that question time, reality, consciousness, and in what we're doing here. That I don't know if you'd agree with me, but maybe we can talk him into being... one of the next interviewees, along with the son.
Excellent idea.
Because I think his life and what he's been through is so fascinating.
You got my vote.
Yeah.
All in favor, say aye.
Yeah, all of us.
Aye.
You're on, Paul.
All right.
Paul, then why don't you continue with the idea of cryptids and what it is that you've experienced, because we know it's varied. There are canid cryptids and there are batmen. And
But quickly, though, because we only got about 2 minutes left.
Yeah, okay.
Well, just very quickly, we went back through, and next month we start 10 years on the air between CBS Radio and WON. And we went through all of the shows, the recorded shows where we interviewed cryptid experts. Fascinating stuff, all kinds of cryptids, flying, walking, swimming, and then included our own experiences, and that's pretty much what the book is going to contain.
Can you give us a hint about one that you experienced?
Well, that Bigfoot one, there weren't too many other than that. However, in New Mexico in 1967, I was camping on a mountain in the Sangre de Cristo, or a hill, Mesa. And there was at night, there was just before dawn, a you could tell it was a two-footed creature of some kind, very heavy, and there was a snuffling sound, and I wanted to see what it was.
Snuffleupagus.
Yeah, right. The big trunk came through the tent, but you know, my tent mate said, "Don't you dare open that flap." So we had to wait, and then it went away. It went out, and there were little holes dug all over the ground. Other than that, I haven't experienced too many cryptids. Ben has, however. It's a shame he's not here because he's experienced them in our woods.
Oh, we miss
in Rhode
Ben
Island.
Here. He better come next time. We won't accept a sick excuse.
You think he was the old man and I was the kid.
Yeah, I know.
So we go through the whole gamut, and that'll be out hopefully the end of next month.
Okay, if there were just holes in the ground, any footprints?
No, it was very dry. Very dry, but there were holes dug in the ground all over the place.
Oh, big holes or little holes?
Relatively moderate-sized holes.
Just holes.
Like a shovel or like a mole?
Oh, more like a mole. But they were very obvious. You have to watch where you step.
Well, one of the comments, especially out west in Arizona, are three-toed creatures, rather large footprints of three-toed creatures. So
everything seems to be out there.
I know weird stuff out there.
Okay, but, yeah, so that's it. We're out of time. So
I
Paul,
guess we have to wrap this up.
Yeah, Paul, do you want to give out websites, addresses,
sure, behind
all that kind of stuff.
BehindTheParanormal.com. That's where you start. 700 free hours of shows. And our book that's out right now, published in November, is Behind the Paranormal, Everything You Know Is Wrong. Just about everything's in there that you want to know. Not to quote Alexander Leake from.
All right, Val, where can we find your books?
My books are available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Seacoast Saucers can be found at SeacoastSaucers.com. Our calendars are also available on Meetup.com under Seacoast Saucers or Consciousness Studies.
Excellent.
Okay, Chuck, what do you got?
Well, geez, I don't know how to follow up all these books. I'm the documentary kind of guy. So first off, Seacoast Saucers, www.seacoastsaucers.com is our website. Anybody that's listening to this that's ever had an experience that wants to know more or talk to people with other experiences, go to meetup.com and look up Seacoast Saucers of New England. And there you can find meetup groups every single month. We have multiple ones where you can meet other people and talk about this.
And you also post some of the little trailers, too, of your interviews, right?
Yeah. And then as far as the Galileo interviews, which you're referring to, I have you can go to the Galileo interviews on Facebook. And there you will find updates as to everything that's going on.
Good.
The one that should be out in the next 2 weeks is with Marina Rose.
Ooh.
So that one will be the first one released. And soon after, we have two more in the stage of production as well. So that would be the Galileo interviews on Facebook.
Thank you.
Excellent. Okay. Paul, Chuck, Bell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure to have you all on.
All three of you.
And that is Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience. Craig Mosier with The Graveyard Shift is coming right up.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. You have a good evening.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test. It is what it is, and whatever. Time is still the infinite jest. The arrow flies when you dream. The hours tick away, the cells tick away. The watchmaker keeps to his schemes. The hours tick away, they tick away. The measure of a life is a measure of love and respect. So easily.